spate of books in the past several years has resurrected the debate over religion. Authors like Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, and others published books critiquing religion and its role in promoting intolerance, fundamentalism, and a host of problems. The book struck a nerve at a time when the simultaneous rise in Christian and Islamic fundamentalist forces in the U.S. and abroad are seen as fomenting endless war and terrorism. Last year, award-winning journalist, foreign correspondent, and author Chris Hedges debated Sam Harris at UCLA's Royce Hall and then Christopher Hitchens in San Francisco over the issue of religion. Out of these encounters comes Chris Hedges' new book, I Don't Believe in Atheists. Hedges warns that Harris, Hitchens, and the rest of these so-called new atheists are just as dangerous as religious fundamentalists. They use the cult of science, he says, to explain social, political, and economic systems. Chris Hedges joins me in studio this morning. Welcome back to Uprising, Chris.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. So let's talk a little bit first about these so-called new atheists. Is this a term you came up with, and did I include everybody when I mentioned Dawkins, Harris, and Hitchens?
Most of them. I mean, Dennett, even Wilson, E.O. Wilson. It's the term they use to describe themselves, although I think it's an important distinction. I graduated from seminary, grew up in a religious household, but a very progressive one. You can't be a serious student of religion or theology and not honor the tradition of atheism in the Western intellectual canon. Or, you know, the great writers, even Nietzsche, who was a mixture of sort of brilliance and insanity, understood the moral consequences of a society that no longer believed in God, the will to power, the moral nihilism that can arise, and Camus and Sartre. So I actually came prepared to sort of, be very tolerant and accepting. I mean, there's nothing intrinsically moral about being a believer or non-believer. Many people of great moral probity and courage have not only arisen in all cultures and all traditions, including Islam, I would remind you, to fight the oppressor on behalf of the oppressed, but many people have led great moral lives without resorting to religious ritual, religious language, religious tradition, have not found meaning in that. But what I found with the new atheists, these especially people like Hitchens and Harris, was that they had used secular language to essentially replicate the ideological structure of the Christian right. And I had just spent 2 years researching and writing a book called American Fascists, the Christian Right, and the War on America, where I had traveled all over the country and spent, you know, countless hours in mega churches and pro-life weekends. And,
right. We had had you on the show talking about that book.
And I was stunned when I read through this stuff. First of all, the racism in it, which, of course, is very much a part of the ideology of the Christian right. The kinds of things that these people like Hitchens and Harris write about Muslims could be lifted from the most rabid sermon by a Christian fundamentalist. I mean, for example, Harris, in his book The End of Faith, asks us to consider carrying out a nuclear first strike on the Arab world. This isn't rational. This is insane. And they constantly make this very false leap from science, in evolutionary biology, to, I think, as you correctly said, the cult of science. The idea that we are evolving morally as a species and that there are sort of human impediments to that great collective moral progress that have to be either converted to, Western civilization. This is their term, not mine. And if not, they have to be eradicated.
Now, when I hear you describe what Harris says, and of course Harris's own words, he sounds a lot like a neocon.
They are like neocons, and I think that what we have that converges here within the Christian right, the neocon agenda, and these new atheists is utopianism. Thomas More coined the word utopia, which means literally no place. It's not a real place. Mm-hmm. And people throughout history who have wedded utopian visions to violence have plunged their societies into moral depravity and criminality. And that's the common thread between the Christian right and these new atheists. They're utopians. I mean, look at the war in Iraq. I think, maybe many of your listeners don't think of Dick Cheney as a utopian. But he is in that sense because for those of us, I spent 7 years in the Middle East. I was the Middle East bureau chief for the New York Times. I'm an Arabic speaker. I think if you take, you know, the roughly 10,000 Arabists in this country, and by that I mean people who have lived and worked in the Middle East for a prolonged period of time and speak Arabic, I don't think you could have found more than about 10 that thought invading and occupying Iraq was a good idea, that we would be greeted as liberators, that democracy would be implanted in Baghdad and emanate outwards and transform the Middle East, and the reconstruction would be paid for by oil revenues. This was a utopian. It was not a vision that was grounded in the reality of Iraq or the reality of the Middle East. And that's what these people are. And that's why their political agenda converges completely with the radical Christian right. The very people they claim they are dead set against.
Let's talk about science, Chris, because as you say, these new atheists use science. But in your book, you say the questions of science are not the questions of religion. And I don't think most people understand, unless they have a training in science, what exactly science is, especially today.
Well, you know, there are no competing truths in science. Karl Popper had a wonderful definition of, you know, that science never offers a truth. It offers something that can't be falsified. And when it can be falsified, it's no longer true, and which often happens in science. And so what these people have done is take a very rigid system and apply it, I think, falsely to human society and human behavior. You know, they have tried to use the analogy of science to govern or to structure human relations. And they don't understand the difference between the irrational and the non-rational. And by that I mean, you know, there are forces in all of our lives that are powerful and real but can't be empirically measured. Love, beauty, alienation, a search for meaning, grief. These are all real, and these color our lives, and we all grapple with them in very profound ways. You know, Marcel Proust once said that the real news of our lives never appears in a newspaper. And by that he meant, of course, that these, you know, these subterranean, non-rational forces which can consume us and do consume us at certain points are in many ways more powerful than the empirical world around us. That's why art is, you know, I think, very akin at its best to religion. And let's separate religious institutions, which I have little patience for, and the religious impulse, which is real. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is art? Art is an attempt to preserve, conserve, protect, acknowledge, honor those non-rational forces. The Buddhists, you know, got it. You can memorize as many sutras as you want. It will never make you wise. Mm. What makes you wise is intuition. What makes you wise is understanding those non-rational forces. And this is completely beyond the ability of these new atheists to grasp. And so they condemn everything as either rational or irrational. And in that sort of bifurcation of the world, they try to impose rational methodology on things that are fitfully in contact with the rational, for instance, politics. I mean, what made it possible for Freud to write his great masterpiece, Civilization and Its Discontents? He understood that politics wasn't rational. The idea that we are evolving morally. This isn't Darwinian science. I mean, in Darwin's Origin of the Species, he said quite correctly that we are captive to our animal natures, that species accrue mutations, but Darwin was just too good a scientist to ever posit where that would end up. Mm-hmm. So what they've done is actually distort evolutionary biology to say that we are evolving morally when I think there is nothing in human history or human nature to support that.
I want to pick up that thread in a moment, but let's talk about this supposed conflict that we constantly hear about, science versus religion. Is this a false conflict?
Completely. As you quoted at the beginning of that chapter, the questions of science are not the question of religion.
And why?
Because the science is about understanding the empirical forces around us.
It's a tool.
It's a methodology. Mm-hmm. It's morally neutral. I mean, what these people have done is place a faith in science that is as deluded as people who think that Jesus is going to come down from the sky and save us. Science is not going to save us. Science, technology, industry, these serve the ambitions of humankind, some of which are good and some of which are bad. It is science and technology that has given us forms of industrial slaughter that were in previous generations of human existence unthinkable. It is science, technology, and industry which is destroying the very ecosystem that sustains the human species. These are new tools, but in the hands of human beings, we see exactly the old folly. And I think that these people have essentially used scientific rationalism as a way to create a sort of malformed theology that is as self-delusional as that embraced by the Christian right.
One of the greatest scientific thinkers of our time, Albert Einstein, whom you quote in your book, what do you think of his approach to science?
I think, well, not only approach to science, but I love Einstein's approach to religion.
Mm-hmm.
He was a complete human being in my mind. But that's often true, you know, with physicists. Physicists have to accept mystery and what was Heisenberg's, you know, great theory, the uncertainty principle. Physicists are all, I always find, fascinating figures. I think that unfortunately, religious institutions, like all human institutions, Paul Tillich, you know, wrote correctly, all human institutions, including the church, are demonic. They're about their own self-perpetuation and power, and they will use religious language to sanctify, slaughter and atrocity and bigotry and everything, as they always have. But I think we have to separate that from the religious impulse, from those great religious thinkers and philosophers, Spinoza, mm-hmm. For instance, Kierkegaard, and others who struggled really to help us understand and cope with the human condition. I'm steeped in theology, but I also read a lot of fiction. It's like Lynn Cheney saying, well, you know, fiction really isn't useful because it's not true. This is sort of where the new atheist coming from. It's this really intellectual provincialism. And I think what worries me about the new atheists, let's be clear, they are reaction to the bigotry and chauvinism of the Christian right, and I detest the Christian right as much as they do. We dislike the same people, but we don't dislike them for the same reasons, and that's not a small difference. And what worries me about the new atheists is I think that they have used the language of scientific rationalism to seduce a lot of people on the secular left, and especially a lot of young people. But at the core, it is really a system that is about self-elevation, a self-exaltation, where our own narrow and particular values are exalted as a universal good. And, to somehow blame suicide bombing or fanaticism on the Quran is to ignore the long, slow drip of repression, abuse, collective humiliation, indignity, foreign occupation of, Israeli soldiers on Palestinian land, for instance, that go into pushing people to acts of desperation. Both of these groups, the Christian right and the new atheists, externalize evil. They don't understand the evil within us, our own complicity in evil. And having spent 2 decades abroad, most of that time in the developing world, I've run into the evil of America many, many times.
My guest is Chris Hedges, if you're just tuning in. He's an award-winning journalist and writer, former foreign correspondent for the New York Times, the Dallas Morning News, the Christian Science Monitor, and National Public Radio, author of several books, including War as a Force That Gives Us Meaning and American Fascists, the Christian Right and the War on America. His latest book is I Don't Believe in Atheists. Chris is also a senior fellow at the Nation Institute and a Lannan Literary Fellow. He's here in Los Angeles for the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books that just ended yesterday at UCLA. So let's talk about what you mentioned earlier, which was the new atheist's belief that humankind, can march towards moral progress, can evolve into this perfect human being using Darwin's theory of evolution. Now, this on the surface sounds a little ludicrous, but do they really say that they believe that man can become perfect?
People who believe that large numbers of human beings have to be eradicated in order to achieve a better world are arguing that we can create, if not a perfect society, a more perfect society.
This is Hitler's belief, though.
Of course. I mean, Nazism and Stalinism are utopian visions. And this all comes out of the Judeo-Christian notion of history, which is foreign in the East as it is foreign in most of the rest of the world. I mean, even if you look back at the ancient Greeks, life was about birth, growth, degeneration, decay, and death, and not only for individuals but societies. But you had this notion in Hebraic this vision of sort of meaningful time and redemption and salvation in Christianity that was picked up actually by the Enlightenment. But unfortunately, what the Enlightenment thinkers dropped was the wisdom of original sin, that notion that we can never create, to quote Augustine, the city of God, that we live in the city of man. And they believe through knowledge and through education and through rational thought and through science, we could create an enlightened world. Well, it was a very short step. And let's be clear, the Enlightenment was in many ways a blessing, especially for the Jews of Europe. It was a very important battle against superstition, much of it propagated by the church, intellectual repression. But at the same time, it became a very short step, as we saw in the French Revolution with the Jacobins, who decided that, well, there were certain segments of the population that were irredeemable and had to be removed. And I think that legacy was just played out all throughout the 20th century. Hmm. And I think this is a call to, in many ways, an understanding of the irredeemable flaws within human nature, the constant struggle, that life is always about struggle, that after one, and that's not to say that individuals like societies can't make moral advances. They do, but they also make moral reverses. We've been reeling backwards since Ronald Reagan. And I don't know where we're going. I'm terrified. I mean, I think we're probably one or two terrorist attacks away from a police state. Mm. It sort of supports the Greek version of history. And I think that notion that after one evil is defeated, there'll always be another to have to rise up and fight against is a much, and in that kind of a more cyclical notion of time is, I think, truer to human reality.
But isn't, approach it from the flip side, isn't a belief that humankind as a whole can march in a better direction, whether or not become perfect, can march in a better direction, isn't that something that, first of all, has played out historically, and second of all, something necessary for us to continue living?
It is, and it's a good thing to embrace, but not to believe that you have cornered an absolute truth, that somehow your way of being, believing, and living is superior to others. It isn't. There are many ways of being. We have no lock on virtue. We have no lock on goodness. I think that an understanding of plurality, an understanding that my truth may not be your truth, does make progress possible. But when you believe that our way of being is the best, whether that's because we're born again or whether that's because we are quote-unquote enlightened members of Western civilization, and, you know, this is why I love Conrad. You know, in the name of sort of virtue and nobility and truth, what are we doing in vast pockets of the developing world in Africa and Latin America and the Middle East? We are exploiting and abusing, robbing their resources, and covering it up with all sorts of fine and flowery phrases. I mean, this is what Conrad sort of understood in the Congo. And it's certainly my own experience. So I think that unless we begin to grapple with the darkness within us, and unless we begin to see ourselves, then we have this tendency to, whether that's done in secular terms or religious terms, to turn in, you know, to sort of go back to my theological training, to turn us into idols. And I think that at its core, what the Christian right is about, and what these new atheists about, are dangerous forms of self-worship.
Hmm. And you say that both of these are sort of fundamentalist forms of thinking. And in summary, would you basically say that spiritualists and secularists are who do understand the nuance and complexity in human nature are in a way caught between these two sides?
Well, we've lost a voice. You know, it's my frustration with the left. I come out of a very progressive religious tradition. My father was very involved in the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, and the gay rights movement. He died in 1995. And he was not only, you know, at war with his congregations, but usually with the hierarchy of the Presbyterian Church. And I fear that, you know, that great progressive tradition, you know, Daniel Berrigan, William Sloan Coffin, Dorothy Day, Martin Luther King, is not being heard. And I suppose in some sense it's an attempt to reclaim it, because I fear that, you know, when we suffer another catastrophic terrorist attack, and every, you know, I covered Al-Qaeda for a year for the New York Times out of Paris, every intelligence chief that I interviewed never used the word if, it was always when. You'll see these forces converge, especially if it's deemed that these attacks came out of the Muslim world to justify a horrible bloodletting, an indiscriminate killing of Muslims, much as we see in Iraq. And I worry about the 6 million Muslims who live within our midst. So it's a kind of plea for us to be grown-ups, to understand the world's complexity, and to stop engaging in these cartoonish visions of reality, this fundamentalist mindset that I think is just gripping a country in the thrall of cliches and the epistemology of television, which is, of course, anti-thought.
My guest is Chris Hedges, and we're discussing his new book, I Don't Believe in Atheists, and you are listening to Uprising. We're going to do something a little different today on Monday. We're going to take a short break to hear this radical day in history, and after that, we're going to open up our phone line so that you can talk to Chris directly, particularly if you think that Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, etc., and if you read their books, if you think that, you know, they are saying the right thing, and if you maybe disagree with what Chris is saying, we'd love for you to take part in this conversation. The number is 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. We'll be right back after this short break. People,
the time. This is your Radio Roots reporter, Crystal Graham. On this day, April 28th, in 1987, an engineer from the United States named Benjamin Linder was killed in Nicaragua in an ambush led by the U.S.-funded Contra rebels. Benjamin Linder was one of many young Americans who traveled to Nicaragua in order to support the 1979 Sandinista Revolution, the same revolution that the U.S. government viewed as a huge threat to American interests in Central and South America. Around this time, the CIA secretly trained and armed thousands of Contra rebels whose job it was to destroy the Sandinista Revolution. After Linder's death, many enraged Americans publicly condemned U.S. intervention in Nicaragua, claiming that their tax dollars had been used to finance the killing of an American citizen. It's as if the fact that this was a covert war, which led to the murder of thousands of Nicaraguan civilians, wasn't enough, since it was only until an American citizen was killed that opposition grew in this country. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you to never let the past slip away.
Welcome back to Uprising. We are with Chris Hedges for the rest of the hour, and he's an award-winning journalist and writer. He's written several books that we've actually talked about on this program. His last one, American Fascists, the Christian Right, and the War on America. We've also heard audio from his debates with Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens. And now, out of those debates comes Chris's new book, I Don't Believe in Atheists. And he is in studio with us. We're going to be taking your listener calls right now. Again, the number is 818-985-5735. We have five guys on the line. We'd love to hear from women. In fact, if you are on hold waiting for the phone to pick up and you are a male, you might consider making way for a female caller to call us right now because the phone lines are full. Let's go first to Jack from Santa Monica. Jack, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Sahali. I actually saw you yesterday. I gave you a copy of my book. What I would like to say to Chris is, it is neither religion nor science that's the problem. Until 1967, we did not know the nature of the human being. We only knew the behavior.
Jack, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I want to suggest that what he does is that he looks beyond the nature of believing. Believing means we don't know. And what religion is based on is the act of believing. And he mentioned another point about morality. There are no two people on the planet who have the same morality listing as any other human being. Morality is a matter of opinion. It goes beyond morality. It goes to the nature of feeling.
Okay, well, Jack, we'll get Chris's response to your statement.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Jack.
Well, I think you're very right. I think you're very right that the problem is not religion or science or anything else. It's the human heart. You know, I spent many years as a war correspondent. I know the intoxication of war, and people or human beings, groups of human beings will find ways to kill, and belief systems that support that, whether that's religious or secular, ethnic nationalism such as the Balkans or anything else. And I think that is one of the great mistakes on the part of these new atheists. Religious dogma has very little impact, in fact, on how people carry out their lives. You know, a Bosnian Muslim is not the same as a Sudanese Muslim. A Bolivian Catholic is not the same as a French Catholic. It's cultural, you know, linguistic, historical, socioeconomic, you know, these geography, all of these things combine, and people can nominally call themselves Muslim or Christian or Hindu or anything else, but it depends far more on where they live. And the cultures that they live in. You know, Pope Benedict can issue as many turgid encyclicals as he likes about birth control or anything else. Most American Catholics ignore him. And I think that this is also a mistake. Religious dogma has very, very little impact on how people behave. And that's just been true. I mean, that's just a factual observation that I made in, you know, traveling all over the world for many years. In terms of morality, I think that art and religion at its best. I think, you know, religious systems are really, religious writers are our first ethicists. I think that art and what, you know, religious thinkers and do are essentially trying to protect the sacred, which is real. And human beings need the sacred. We live in a society that has destroyed the sacred. Everything in our society in this sort of, you know, rapacious age of totalitarian capitalism and globalism, human beings have been turned into commodities. Our water has been turned into commodity. And I think that loss of the sacred, you know, we in a society on the left and the right talk about human labor and outsourcing in terms of statistics without understanding that this is about human suffering. Mm. And I think that getting back to that understanding is a deeply or an authentically religious sentiment. Mm.
Let's go to Erica from Santa Barbara. Erica, are you with us?
Well, I was wondering, how is it that the Scandinavian countries, compared to us and most of the rest of the world right now, seem to be doing so well? I mean, they have been against war. They're taking care of their people.
So you want to know if they are as religious people as Americans are, for example?
Excuse me?
Do you want to know if they are as religious a people as Americans?
No, I just wondered to what does he attribute the fact just about all of the Scandinavian countries are versus the Alpha Peace. And they, by the way, they're not in debt either.
Okay, well, Erica, thanks for your question.
And, mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's actually a good question. I mean, what is it that has allowed the rise of such fundamentalism within the United States? And I think it is attributed to two or three things. First of all, the physical destruction of community. When you look at these former industrial centers, Youngstown, Ohio, you know, the end of the world is no longer an abstraction to many of these people. And I interviewed many of them for my book, American Fascists, and they come out of real economic and personal despair. And we in the liberal elites have walked out on them, certainly by supporting a Democratic Party that pays lip service to the working class and then unleashes NAFTA and throws 10 million people off the welfare rolls. You know, deregulates markets that allows, you know, the predatory lending on and on and on. And European societies have just not disintegrated as much as we have, which is a huge check against fundamentalism. And they've also physically protected community. I used to live in Switzerland. I mean, many ways through zoning laws. You know, you still have markets. You still have interaction. We live in a deeply diseased and decaying society, and decaying societies reach out for fanatic utopian visions. That's a consequence. And so we're seeing it in secular terms and we're seeing it in religious terms. And I think, in fact, these movements, although, you know, I look at the Christian right as a mass movement, not as a religious movement. I think it's the most dangerous mass movement in American history. I don't use the word fascist lightly. I think that they are fascist when you pick apart their cult of personality and lust for apocalyptic violence and call for moral renewal and anti-intellectualism and on and on and on. I mean, what is creationism? It's just a modern version of eugenics. I think that although we like to think of ourselves as a religious society, And the Christian right will certainly use the trappings of religion. I think we've become a really irreligious and deeply callous and cruel society that uses religious language, or in the case of New Atheism, Western civilization and scientific rationalism, to sanctify and justify a barbarity.
Let's go next to Jerry from Santa Monica. Jerry, welcome to Uprising.
Two quick points that I would disagree strongly with Chris Hedges. I do have his book. But anyway, the first point was the term atheism as such simply means not theistic. That's all it means. And to attribute what the views of Sam Harris to atheism is overloading the word, because there are different kinds of atheists. There are Stalinist, fascist, every kind of person could be an atheist.
Okay, Jerry, can you make your second point real quick so we can get the answer?
That is, you attribute to the lack of spiritual values things that are...
Unfortunately, your phone line was a little bit difficult for us to hear, Jerry, but we did get your first point. Chris, do you respond?
I wouldn't disagree with them. That's why I use the term new atheist. I don't think these people are atheists. I think they're secular fundamentalists. I don't have a problem with atheists. I graduated from Harvard Divinity School. They've probably contributed more to the community of atheism than any other institution in America. I think that's why I made that distinction.
Mary from Eagle Rock, you are with us on the air. Welcome to Uprising, Mary.
Hi. I'm really thrilled that you have written your books. I think they are excellent to the point. I want to hope that you are able to get more publicity than is likely in our controlled media, but I wish you well, and I look forward to buying them. I'm assuming that they can be bought in regular bookstores.
Yes, absolutely.
Is that correct?
Do you have a question there? Yes, they can be bought in regular bookstores. Do you have a question?
Yeah, that was, well, if he's coming, coming to Southern California, I would love to hear him speak.
Well, I think you spoke at the LA Times Festival of Books, right? Well,
I didn't know that.
I'm sure you can catch him again. Chris definitely comes to LA quite a bit. Thank you, Mary.
Yeah.
And Chris,
do you have a
website where listeners can find out about your speaking dates?
I don't. I'm a Luddite. I don't.
All right. Well, let's go to Shayon from Long Beach. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name right. Welcome to Uprising.
Thank you.
Hi. Did I say your name right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. Okay, go on.
Well, I like to agree. I don't think those people are atheists. I think they're just quacks, that just needs a platform to spew hatred and rhetoric and et cetera, et cetera. But in respect to Christian fundamentalists, what mindset do you contribute for, let me see, far as white supremacy is concerned? Because when they involved the enslavement of Africans, they used Christianity as a justification for enslaving the Africans and many other people of color around the planet. So what philosophy of white supremacy do you attribute to Christian fundamentalism?
I think white supremacy is alive and well in the Christian right. And if you look back at their historical antecedents, where do they come from? I mean, look at people like Tim LaHaye. They come out of the John Birch Society, the World Anti-Communist League, all the way back to the Klan. And never forget that every chapter of the Ku Klux Klan had a chaplain. And I think that what they've done is very cleverly, they understand that overt racism is unpalatable, thankfully. However, they have found new language and new belief systems to justify economic discrimination and racism. And they talk about the free market. They peddle a belief system where people who are poor or suffering are poor and suffering because they're not right with Jesus. And this has just become a linguistic trick to keep the poor, to keep the oppressed. We have resegregated American society. I spent 2.5 years living in a housing project in Roxbury when I was in divinity school running a church, which was, for a white male, probably the most important experience of my life. I didn't understand institutional racism then, how all of these powerful institutional forces, from the courts to probation officers to the schools to the police, work to the banks, work to keep poor people poor, and don't give them a chance. And the language of the free market, which is a misnomer because it's, you know, it is not this sort of linguistic trick to use the word freedom to explain, to essentially cover up economic exploitation, has been deftly handled in by not only the Christian right, but by those people who have rammed globalization down our throats.
Chris Hedges, we're out of time. And also to our listeners who are waiting on the line, I'm afraid we don't have any more time. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks so much to our callers, and apologies to those that we couldn't get to. For Sonali, subversive thought for the day, I thought I'd quote Albert Einstein. He once said, "The most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. It is the source of all true art and all science. He to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer pause to wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. His eyes are closed." That's Albert Einstein. That's Sonali's subversive thought for the day.